Thank you for tuning in to the Essential Church Podcast, a church where we focus on restoration over denomination. If you're in the Virginia Beach area and would like to find out more about Essential Church, visit our webpage at essentialchurch.com.
Yeah, I always love the start of a new year. I love taking sort of an assessment. I love the opportunity we have to sort of start over and begin again. I always loved when I was in school and I would get to change schools. Because, you know, if you were a geek or a dork at one school, you could kind of reinvent yourself the next year. If you sort of had a bad reputation, you could go to another school, another place, and sort of reinvent yourself. And I know at different times it was funny. I came from like the number one party school in the country, and then I went to a seminary. And I was actually, the thing about being at a seminary is I finally found something I love to do. Like, I really loved, like, I didn't have to take a biology class at seminary. They don't even offer it. It's wonderful. And so I loved it, and like I went from like all my life I was sort of like a C plus, B minus student. Whatever I had to do, just to, you tell me what GPA I have, I'll have it. Exactly. And I went to seminary and just loved it, and I was a 4.0 student for a good bit of it. I got like, I don't know, like I'd get maybe one B or so every here and there, but just, and I'll never forget some guys going to play basketball one time. I'm like, hey, what are you guys doing? They're like, going to play ball. I'm like, oh, I want to come. Look at me like, Yeah, like you do anything other than read books. I'm like, oh, I'm a nerd. Oh my gosh, I've never been the nerd at school. It was just like a weird, weird thing, like how I had completely reinvented. But I love the opportunity we have every year to sort of reinvent ourselves. And at the beginning of a year, it's always a time to sort of go back and reassess kind of where we're at and where we want to be. And by the way, we'll get to Stanley in a minute. So hopefully I'll get back to Stanley. Just kind of tuck that in the back of your head. And I hope there's a piece of what he said there that will stick with you after this morning. So sometimes like what you want to get out of the video is at the very end of the message. It doesn't set it up. It's like at the very end. So I hope that doesn't throw you off. So, but you know, when I think about where I'm at now, so often I sort of look back and I'm like, wait a minute, this isn't where I wanted to be. Like I know at the beginning of last year, I said where I wanted to be, whether it be financially, like maybe you start off a year, you want to get out of debt, and then like the end of the year, you're like, I'm in worse shape than I was when I began the year. How did this happen? Or like you start off with like either a weight program or an exercise program, and then all of a sudden somewhere middle of the year, maybe like early February, it just kind of died out, and it just didn't get back in. By the way, I hear that the gyms are opening up now, because it's you're almost at February where nobody will go anymore if you want to really use your membership. And you know, things like with, I know like in parenting, there's things that we set out for our kids to do, and like you'll see your kids do something, you're like, wait a minute, didn't we say that they weren't going to do that anymore? And we're like, oh yeah, we quit from enforcing that like months ago. And just it's just funny the way things happen. It's like everything tends just to drift. It's like being at the beach, and you go out in the water, and before long, the umbrella is gone. And it's just like, where'd it go? And it just drift. Or if you're sitting on the beach like I am now, it's like roles reversed. Now I'm sitting on the beach looking at the kids, right? And you look down at the newspaper, whatever you're looking at on the phone probably, and they'll look up, I'm like, where'd the kids go? You know, and they've just drifted. They've just gone. And you're like, I told you guys to stay in front of the umbrella. We didn't move. Well, somehow you did, and so it's just, this kind of thing happens, just the drift, and the thing about drift is, drift never takes you anywhere good, right? I mean, at the beach, it takes you to the pier, it takes you away from home base, and life, it takes you away from what it is you set out to want to do. Nothing good happens with drift. Marriages don't get better when they drift. You know, when you quit thinking about the marriage, quit working on the marriage, quit focusing on the marriage, quit dating in the marriage, quit reestablishing your love in the marriage, things just drift, and one day people wake up and just say, I don't really know why we're even together anymore. It's like, how'd that happen? It was a drift, and you just continue to drift and drift and drift, and you know, we drift away from our budgets, and so we habitually overspend without really thinking about it, and one day, sort of like that wake-up call, like when you hit the pier, is like when you finally realize the credit card's more than we could possibly pay, and you're like, how did this happen? How did we get to this place? And it's just, we drifted. We didn't intentionally set out. Like I didn't, you know, in August of last year, I didn't set out and say, you know, that's it. We're done with the budget. Let's spend whatever we want. We don't do that, right? You know, we don't get to June and say, you know, honey, I'm sick and tired of dating you, okay? Seriously, you know, you want dinner? Pick it up on your way home, okay? I hope you don't do that, all right? But but the thing is we do that, though. And we don't know how we did that. It's just, we drift. We've Some of you are like, see, honey, I'm not the only one. That wasn't the point of that part there. I was saying you don't do that. A healthy, well-adjusted person does not do that, okay? You know, like with kids always drift to chaos. Everything in their life drifts to chaos. Like, you ever, like, hadn't been in the room in, like, a week, and then you walk in, you're like, what on earth? How did this happen? How did you do this with your room in 1 week? Their manners drift to chaos, right? Like, you haven't been out to dinner with them for a while, and also when you go out, and, like, the kids are jumping up and down on the booth, and you're like, when have you ever stood on a chair? You don't do that at home. Why are you standing on a chair? Why would you do that? And, you know, everything drifts to chaos. Their manners, their actions, everything just drifts nowhere good. And we don't intentionally set it to do it. We just do it. The other thing I think is very interesting is the amazing ability of people to literally just change when they want to change. Have you noticed that? Like, it doesn't matter how jacked up or how dysfunctional something is, I'm always amazed at people's ability to change. We have a friend of our family who our kids have known since they were young, and you know the problem with kids is they don't have any filter when they need to, and so she'd come in and they just, you know, say things. And it's neat. I've been watching her on Facebook because she's on an effort now for this past year to lose 150 pounds, and it's just been so neat to watch. You know, because, you know, she'll take a picture every so often. It's just been neat to see. I think she's already 75 pounds into this journey, and it's neat. And, you know, she'll talk about how miserable she is, and the problem, like, if you watch, like, the updates in between pictures, she'll talk about the misery of what she's eating or what she's having to do, but then you'll see the smile on her face, and she'll be like, you know, here I am. Now, here's the thing. If you don't know the backstory, you'll go, not looking so good. You've thought that. I know you have, right? But when you know the story and you know where she was, you're going, oh my gosh, you've been doing amazing. And, you know, because, you know, it's sort of like last year. There's where you were and there's where you're going to go. And where you're at right now, you need to be excited about and comfortable with and have hope for tomorrow. Because, you know, one thing about that picture is I see that picture as not a static picture. That picture is in motion. You with me on this? Because I know the picture was here. And I know where it's going and it's in motion. And somebody who doesn't know it's in motion might go, I don't see anything. But if you know it's in motion, you're like, yeah, I see where it's going, and you see the hope of where it's going, and it's neat to see what people can do. It's neat to see marriages that are in bad, bad shape. And there's a statistic out there that something like over 80% of marriages, if they will just stick with it through a difficult time, within 2 years, will say, I have a great marriage, okay? It may be a, I don't know if I can use the word hellacious. Is that like a sinful word to say? Okay. It may be a hellacious ride, full of a lot of tears and a lot of pain to get to that point. Those 2 years of sort of reinventing the relationship and loving when you don't want to love and caring when you don't want to care and doing it from an act of the will and almost in defiance of their hatred for you. You ever had to love in defiance of hatred? You know what I'm talking about? And you just begin to love even when you don't want to love. And then eventually, somehow, some way, the feelings come back, and the marriage is in a good place. And it's funny, I'll have some marriages where I'll sit down, I'll talk with them, and then, like, I won't be tracking with them for a little while, and all of a sudden be like, so, hey, how's it going? They're like, what are you talking about? We're in a great place. It's like, oh, okay. I just love hearing those stories where people get back on track. And so the question is, you know, how do you keep from drifting? You know, if you look at this year and you say, you know, maybe this year will be different. Maybe this should be different. How can you make sure that this year is different than years past? That's really the whole point of this series, is how do you get to the point where this year will be different? Because time changes nothing. You with me on this? Time changes nothing. Time gives you the opportunity to change, but it itself doesn't change anything, okay? I mean, like, it doesn't heal anything, it doesn't fix anything. Nothing gets better over time, but time will give you the opportunity to get better. Like my friend who's in this journey of 150 pounds, she's not going to lose that overnight, right? It's going to take time. But if she just says, well, you know, it's got to take time, and then does nothing, nothing will change. So what is it we can be doing this year so we can kind of turn that maybe this year will be different into a this year will be different? Just get rid of the maybe. Maybe I should have called that as the series. Just get rid of the maybe. Maybe we can just change the name of the series. Like, just, can we X that out next week, Alex? So nix the maybe. Well, to figure that out, go back to Hebrews chapter 3. Now, this has been an issue for a long time, people drifting. We're not the first generation to drift. We're not the first people to struggle with drifting. I find it very comforting that when I go back in Scripture and that people within the first generation after Jesus died on the cross and rose again from the dead, I find it comforting that even those people drifted. I mean, you would think to yourself, I mean, of course we do. We're struggling here in the 21st century with all the advertising and the marketing, and it's been, you know, 2,000 years since Jesus was here. You know, but those people back then, they probably had it easy, because, I mean, if I could have seen Jesus walk and talk and been around me, I can tell you right now, I'd be living differently. No, you wouldn't. I know you wouldn't, because I see how they were living, and they had the same problem with drifting. And if you go back to Hebrews chapter 3, verse 12, it says this, Hebrews chapter 3. Hebrews is kind of towards the back half of the New Testament. It's like the last big book before you hit Revelation, so there'll be a bunch of little small things, and then you'll hit Hebrews and then Revelation. So what am I? Gosh, I am so old school. I'm assuming some of you actually have paper books. You're like, yeah, I found it in a second. Just three clicks away. Look at those things. Can you hold that up? If any of you all, like, you know, are historians, that's what kids used to use. That's what, you know, like the adults used to use back in the day. Kids these days, you know, wow, that's a good throwback. All right, I like that. So for you three, if you go to the back half of the book, you'll find it. The rest of you, just spelled with an H, H-E-B. So old school, I just forget about these things. All right, moving on. As I'm sitting up here with my iPad in my fake book cover. You know, you're with me, right? Hey, I was one of those kids. I went off to seminary, and I did not know the books of the Bible. I had the old tabs. Remember the tabs? And I was like the only kid with tabs. Like, bringing tabs to seminary is like showing up for the cycling team with training wheels, you know, or a big wheel. You know, like you're at, you know, like you know the kids on the block. You know, they got their, you know, their you know, dirt bikes. You're like, hey, we're gonna go off road, and you show up with your big wheel. That was me with my tabs at seminary, because like, be Habakkuk. You know, just, sorry, I came out of there pretty literate in the Bible, but went in really dumb. Moving on. All that to get back to Hebrews chapter 3. See to it, brothers and sisters, that none of you has a sinful, unbelieving heart that turns away from God. See to it, brothers and sisters, that none of you has a sinful heart, sinful, unbelieving heart that turns away from living God. Now, if he's warning people that this doesn't happen, obviously, it's happened, right? I mean, if there's a warning of it, and he's seeing it, and he feels the need to write about this. By the way, we don't know who wrote Hebrews. Clearly, it was somebody who knew a lot of stuff about Jesus and how he works into the picture, because it's one of the best books as far as connecting the Old Testament to the New Testament. And he's writing it as an encouragement as persecution is increasing amongst people who are trying to follow God. And so in the midst of this, he sees, you know, as the persecution is increasing, people are dropping out, and he says, listen, see to it. See to it, brothers and sisters, that none of you has a sinful, unbelieving heart that turns away from the living God. And if you think about it, it's like who on earth would just turn away from God? I mean, who on earth would just, you know, decide one day, like, you know, forget it, I'm not going to follow God anymore. I mean, who on earth would know the difference between right and wrong and what God would have them do for them and know that the future that God has for them and just say, forget it, I'm not doing it, I'm doing my own thing. Who would do something like that? Anybody? Three, four, five, all. Some of you are like, I don't know, are we supposed to raise our hands right now? Yes, all of us would do that, right? All of us would do that. So how do we get there? How do we keep from doing that? Well, he gives you the solution in here, but it's almost sort of subtly in here, if you have kind of look at it. Notice the plurals in this. See to it, what's the word? Brothers and sisters. And if you're in the South and you have the New Southern Translation, that none of y'all has a sinful, that none of y'all, that's actually, you know, that's the problem with English, you know, that you have the you is singular and plural, and English is one of the most jacked up languages when you look at some of these things, and so that's, Southerners get it right. So we say, listen, see that you all, how do you keep from drifting at the beach? How do you keep from drifting at the beach? What? I couldn't hear you. What? You don't go. Oh, come on. Bah humbug. My goodness. Move. Go somewhere else. I don't know, man. There are thousands and hundreds of thousands of people who would be dying to live at the beach where you live right now. They save up all year just so they can spend 1 week in your backyard, you know? You're thinking, yeah, I know. I wish they'd leave. But no, it's wonderful, man. The beach. It's free entertainment. The way you keep from drifting is somebody else. There's a plurality. There's two ways. One is, you know, my kids keep from drifting because I'm on the beach constantly pulling them back, right? Because I'm up there watching them go down this beach. And I say, hey, come on back. Or have you noticed, you know, I noticed with my kids, if there's several of them out there in a group, there's a much better chance that somebody in that group will all of a sudden wake up and realize where they're at and say, hey guys, where's the umbrella? And they'll all come out, they'll walk back up the beach, and then they'll go back out. And you'll notice this, the frequency with which they do that, I noticed for me, I wish I knew the algorithm. I wish I knew what the magic number was so it doesn't happen at all. But the more kids there are together, the less likely they are to drift all the way down the beach. And because when there's a plurality of people, you're less likely to drift. And the idea here, of course, is you got to have somebody tracking with you in your life. And where this is getting to is it has to be something where you get together with other people who are tracking with you in your life. I mean, what if you shared your financial goals with somebody else, and over the course of the year, you not just you and your spouse, or not just you and your family, but you, maybe one or two other couples, were tracking with a financial program, and each one of you tried to keep each other accountable and ask each other on a regular basis, hey, how are you doing with this? How are you doing this? How are you doing this? You know, we've paid off millions of dollars in debt in this church already. Personal debt. How? Financial Peace University. Yeah, dude, Dave Ramsey. I mean, is there anything magic about Dave Ramsey? No, he doesn't, like, give you money for taking the course. I mean, it's not like you sign up for Dave Ramsey and you'll get a $60,000 grant to pay off your debts. No. What happens is you live like no one else, so one day you can live like no one else. And you're not doing that alone. You have other people with you every single week are pulling you back in. And every single week somebody asks you, how'd you do this week? Did anybody pay anything off this week? Did anybody make any adjustments this week? How are you doing keeping up with your budget this week? You have somebody basically saying, hey, where's the umbrella? Where's the umbrella? Have you drifted? Others of you, you've been in an environment where you're focusing on a marriage for a while. It's called a marriage small group, or the topic is marriage. And week after week after week, I always tell people, listen, you wouldn't have to come in and see me for counseling if you just went to a marriage small group. Okay, because all the content I'm going to share with you is being shared right now in this small group. And if you were with them, you'd be tracking. Not only would you get the material, not only would you get the wisdom and the knowledge, but you'd have somebody tracking with you week after week after week saying, hey, how you doing? How you doing? Are you thinking the best of your spouse right now? How'd you do this week of thinking the best? You know, when they didn't come home, when they said they're going to be home, did you think the best or did you automatically assume the worst? That's one of the topics of one of the marriage small groups. And you have somebody who can track that and track that and track that. Because listen, if you don't track that, you don't have somebody who's invading your space, because you need somebody to invade your space, okay, you'll just continue to drift. And here's the thing, we fool ourselves into thinking, well, you know, I go to church. That's why I go to church every single week, because, you know, this kind of gets me right back on track. No, this doesn't. People don't change from coming to church. People don't change from coming to church. I love what Andy Stanley says. He says, it's because the rows don't know. The rows don't know. You can sit in rows all you want, but nobody in the rows knows what's going on in your life. They just don't. Anybody can do church, right? You can fake it for 1 hour every single week. Nobody's going to get up in your business. Nobody's coming in there and saying, okay, Carter, seriously, how'd you do last week? We talked about hope. Do you have some hope for this year?
No.
So, okay, yeah, see? Matter of fact, a lot of you all love the anonymity of church. You can come in, and you can sort of just listen passively and walk out. And it's funny, when I ask people about coming and joining a small group, sometimes people say, no, I don't want to be involved in those things. Why? Because I don't want to have to share. I don't want to have to talk. I don't want to be getting my business. Yeah, that's right, because you don't want to grow. You don't want to grow. You just want to stay in a row because the row don't know. And it won't show you what's going on. It won't show you what's going wrong. It won't show you where the umbrella is week after week after week, and it won't track with you. So he says, listen, brothers and sisters, y'all, group people. Now, some of y'all here's the thing that happens. Some of y'all grew up in a smaller church, and smaller churches operate like small groups. I remember a day and a time when I used to pastor a small group church in the biz, so to speak, sort of like pastor talk. We call them small group churches. Any church that's less than 75 people, usually 50 to 75, is a small group church. And you know small group church. I remember back in the day and the time, I could walk in the room and I could name everybody in the entire room. I could say, oh, I don't know him. It must be his first time here. I saw him 2 weeks ago. I think it was just him and, is it Mary Lee? Yeah. Yeah, they've been here 2 weeks now. I talked to them last week. He said he did some public speaking and stuff. And then I could do that with everybody in the room every single week. And if somebody would miss, I could call them up like, hey, where you been? What's been going on? You been on vacation? What's going on? So you could track with somebody and keep up with somebody. And even there, you're still in rows, but at least in the rows, you know everybody. And then at some point after a church hits about 100, you lose it from there. And if you're not in circles, if you're not in small groups, what do we do in our church? We basically, there's only two ways to join the church. Coming here is not joining this church. You're just an attending. You're in a row, and we don't know much about you in a row. What do we call them? Groups and teams. Those are the two, very intentional choosing of words. You need to be involved in a group and a team, because in a group, you can begin to do life with somebody who has the same goals for you, and when you drift, they can say, hey, what's going on? Why are you drifting? What's going on? It gives you the opportunities for you to have, if you remember back a couple months ago, we did a series on David And David's life and his purity and where he was at with God rose and fall depending on who was in his life. When he had Jonathan in his life, he was in a good place. When Nathan was in his life, he was back in a good place. When all he had was Joab, who was a mutually facilitating friend, or he was out on his own, he went nowhere fast. And so we said, you need to have some Jonathans in your life. And where do you find a Jonathan? In a small group. In a small group. You got to find them in a small group. You got to have that network. And if you look at what we do as a church, everything we do as a church is about trying to connect you with other people. Everything we're doing as a church is trying to connect you with other people. We actually have filters that we go and say, hey, are we going to do this? No, it doesn't connect people with other people. If it's not going to connect you with somebody else in some way, shape, or form, or be an entry point for you to start a relationship, we're not going to do it. Why? Because you're not going to change unless you're in a group. You're going to be the same person today, or you'll be the same person a year from now that you are today, unless you get in a group. It's a fact. I mean, you just will. You won't change. You won't grow. And you'll say, maybe this year. No, you're going to drift. Maybe this year will be different. I'm going to really try. I'm going to really put my effort to it. You're going to drift. Think about when you try to get in shape. What's the difference between working out and working out with a friend?
Accountability.
How much does it cost when you go to pay for physical therapy to rehab something you had surgery on? What's about $75 to $200 a visit if you're looking at your insurance bill? You ever like go there and like, I know this is always frustrating to me, like the first time you show up, the physical therapist is working you through all the exercises, you know, or like that. And then about your third trip, they put you up with some like 18-year-old assistant. And the assistant sits with a clipboard and is like, yeah, do the arm thing. Okay. And then like about week five, they walk in and the same 18-year-old assistant like hands you the clipboard and says, okay, here, go for it. And they just go back and sit at their desk and be with me on this. And I think to myself, what am I paying $200 for right now? Seriously. What am I paying $200 for? Anybody tell me. Tell me, what am I paying $200 for? Because I could just do this on my own. How many of y'all, after your last week of physical therapy, they always tell you the same thing? Every time. All right, now you're good. Now you need to continue doing this at home. And they give you some of them rubber band things and everything else, and they give you like a couple old photocopied sheets of exercises, you know, with, you know, the guy doing this stuff. And none of y'all ever did it more than once. Maybe you did it one time, but most of y'all don't even do it ever, right? It's like you don't floss unless the dentist is doing it, right? Oh, yeah, Stephanie, oh, every week, mm-hmm, yeah. But what you paid for was accountability. What you paid for was accountability. It doesn't cost anything to be in a group at church. It doesn't cost anything. I mean, some groups, you know, they buy a book together. But, you know, hey, you can buy your book on your own. The accountability part is what you need. And that's what the group's all about. So brothers, sisters, y'all see to it. If you were to read the contemporary country version, it'd see like, hey now. Y'all see that none of y'all has a sinful, unbelieving heart now that done turned away from God. So he says, unbelieving heart. Where do I want to go? We'll start with the heart thing. It starts in the heart. Where you're going to drift to is going to start in your heart before it ever has something that shows anybody else sees. And part of the problem that we have is that by the time things get bad, it's hard to fix things when they get real bad. Like a lot of people can see when the finances are so bad that you can't do anything and they're debilitating. But what if you had somebody who could see when the heart was going in that direction early on? What if you could catch it early on? When the relationships break down, when the teenagers haven't been parented in so long that there's such a deep-seated rebellion and chaos that it's hard to fix? What if somebody could have intervened early on in the process when they saw that your heart was drifting? That's the idea here. Is it all begins in the heart. And so what if you had somebody who was tracking with your heart and says, you know, something ain't right here. What's going on? I noticed that when you guys come to group, you guys are like not anywhere near each other on the couch. I noticed you guys are like opposite sides of the room. Are you guys okay? And this says encourage one another. That doesn't mean, hey, way to go. Go team, go. All right. Yeah, you can do it. You can do it. No, this is more of a to appeal to implore. This is where you need somebody like Stanley. If we get back to Stanley. What'd Stanley say? Have you lost your ever-loving mind? Because I'll help you find it, okay? What you need in a small group, okay, is somebody who can get in your face and say, have you lost your mind? And it says, notice it says the deceitfulness of sin. Did I get to that second part of the verse? I lose it in here. It says, be encouraged one another daily, as long as it's called today, so that none of you may be hardened by sin's deceitfulness, is how that verse ends. Be encouraged, but encourage one another daily, as long as it's called today, so that none of you may be hardened by sin's deceitfulness. Sin is deceitful. You will begin to believe things that aren't true. We think of sin as an action, but sin is that little voice inside your head that's always telling you, oh, it don't matter. Everybody else is doing it. Listen, anybody who was married to her would be doing the same thing, right? Anybody in your situation would be going down the same route. That's sin's deceitfulness. Sin is a voice in your head. It's constantly telling you dumb things. It's telling you things that nobody else would buy into the logic of. And here's what happens. If you have a small group environment, and you're sitting in a small group, and at some point you say, you know, my wife and I, we were kind of talking about maybe having an open marriage. What do you guys think? No, put him back up. Don't take him off. Don't take him off. Put him back up, please. You need somebody in the group who says that. Because I've been in that counseling room and had somebody say that to me. I've happened 4 times already in this church. We're just thinking, you know, why not? We have had people talk about credit cards. And so, you know, we're going through a difficult time right now. So we were thinking we would use the credit card to, you know, just kind of finance some things, you know, for a couple months, you know, in hopes that we get a job lined up. That's what you need. You need somebody who can, when you verbalize where your heart's deceitfulness is taking you, can say, have you lost your ever-loving mind? I'm so thankful that I have some friends in my life who've said that to me. And you know where those friends have come from? My small group. That's where they come from. Because your small group is a factory of Jonathan's. It's a factory of Jonathan's. I got to close out, but here's the thing about this. I mentioned how you will drift unless you're doing something intentionally not to. No, leave him up. Don't take him off. I want that burnt in their minds. Sorry, Casey. I want that burnt in their minds. You know, I want them when they leave this room, that's what they need to be thinking of. Most of you, your friends, were not intentional. Because you would not have intentionally chosen a lot of people you're friends with, okay? Think about it. Come on now. You're friends with them because your kids played ball together. You're friends with them because you work together. You're friends with them because they happen to work out at the same place you work out at. You didn't like interview them and say, okay, what are your hopes and dreams and life goals? What's your moral standards for your family? How do you want to raise your kids? What's your financial goals this year? What do you think is a good way to honor your wife? You didn't ask those questions when those friendships happened, right? You just kind of randomly drifted into a friendship. Small groups is about intentionally choosing and saying, I'm going to do life. I'm going to allow normal to be determined by the people I do life with. It always happens. We always determine normal by the people we do life with. I want my normal to be set by these people. I want to have some intentionality in my friendships. You can have friendships with whoever you want to have friends with. And it's good to have all kinds of friends. But you need to have some friends who are intentionally set up and designed. People who can be that anchor. People who can bring you back and get you back to the umbrella of safety where you need to be. You with me on this? All right. Everything was great. All these rows, they don't know what you're going to do after this. I'll just tell you this. You need to go on the website today and sign up for a small group. It couldn't be easier. You just go to essentialchurch.com. There's a small groups thing at the top. You'll scroll down, get a little information about small groups, and there's a link. You can click on that link, and it'll show you where these groups meet. It'll tell you when these groups meet, what they're going to be talking about. All you do is click on there, enter your name, boom, you're in a group. Okay, I looked this morning. There's 9 groups available right now. Okay, there's 9 groups available. Some of them have a cap. Some of them don't have a cap. If you want to get in the good ones, sign up now. I'm just kidding. But seriously, ignore me right now and go on your smartphone right now and sign up for a group. It's that important. It is that important. You will be the same person 1 year from today as you are right now because you're going to drift unless you get in a group. Let's pray. Father, may we not just hope for a change this year, but actually make some changes and allow that change to begin with being intentional about our year, being intentional about who we do life with. Just getting involved in some small group, even if it's a topic we don't care about, just so we can be in an environment where we can meet someone who could be a Jonathan for us, someone who could encourage us. Someone who could be a Ruth who says, where you go, I will go. Father, may we be willing to take that step. Give the opportunity to work in our life. And in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Essential Church Podcast. Let me encourage you to pause for a moment and reflect on what you've heard. It's not the hearing of the word, but the application that makes all the difference. We'll be right back.